How should I start? Do we have a start? Like,
welcome back.
See, you got it. She'll do it. Go.
Welcome back to Free People, Free People. This is week two and our second conversation that we're having today with you guys. I am Tanya.
This is my husband, Felix.
And that's Lion right there. He doesn't like his beanie. He thinks it's too warm. If either of us pass out, we're actually on the fifth day of our master cleanse, and Lion will be finishing the show because he's the only person who's absorbed some nutrients today.
So last week, not only did we launch our first episode of Free People, we also launched a physical Free People. So we mentioned a little bit that we have a space in downtown LA, and we opened our business and our space to friends and family and strangers off the street. So we started something called Free People Social Night.
So as far as this conversation goes, you don't have to be in the building to be in the house, but mm-hmm. since the house is here in Los Angeles, we figured we'd open it up for some people to come hang, talk about maybe some challenging stuff, network a bit, and maybe even showcase your stuff. So the way we decided to curate something that might have been in your heart from the last year or maybe deal with for the next year was we decided to throw up these keywords. We have a bunch of really interesting creative friends, and Harry shared his reel, and it was super eclectic, from commercials to music videos, Bad Bunny to Cardi B to I don't know what. Right after that, he kind of talked about creating in the film world. So it's really cool to hear the perspective of a filmmaker. So we threw up all these words, I downloaded an app, and I entered every word, and the app picked the word validation. And that's kind of the goal of the whole evening. Let's pick this word that might be troublesome, or let's pick this word that maybe we want to celebrate, and let's just share stories.
Yeah!
Milkface! And youth and families and kids are welcomed, obviously, as you see. That's just what it is. This is the season of our life where our child is top priority. So whatever we do with him. Yeah. And maybe if something sticks, we do for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hilarious because we have no idea how any of these episodes are going to turn out, but that's just the way that parenting goes. You wake up in the morning and you don't know how the day's going to go. You don't know how your kid's going to be, but it gives you a new value for life and puts everything into perspective. And part of the reason why we wanted to start these conversations is because I think as parents, since having Lion, it has just given us a new fuel to just do what really matters to us. And work on the projects that are really those heart projects that you always say, hey, you're going to do this thing, and you put it on a pack back burner. For this conversation, we wanted to share our story with you. We have been married for 5 years? 5 years-ish. It'll be 5 years this year.
Soon, April.
Yeah.
What date in April?
24th.
Oh, see? She didn't know how many years, but she remembers the day. You best believe she remembers that.
Okay.
Say bye, people. Bye.
So you're really going to attempt to tell our story right now?
I'm going to try.
I don't know if there's enough battery power. Netflix, if you're watching, this is definitely like a docuseries or some sort of like, maybe even a film, Lionsgate. You know, we worked together in the past. Might want to reach out for the film rights, but whatever.
I think a good place to start is how we met.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know me, I've pro skated most of my life, and pro skateboarding opened up a bunch of fancy doors, and one of them was actually hosting events. So I went from hosting the X Games to hosting a bunch of different stuff, and one of the things that presented itself was the Kimberley Diamond Cup in South Africa. And after I was done hosting the event, I was going back to my hotel room, and one of my friends who I was there with was going back for the opening ceremonies of the event. And I was like, opening ceremonies of the event? I'm like, man, I'm all evented out. I'm done. But then I thought to myself, I was like, well, you know, we may be able to attribute South Africa, Africa, to creating the drum. So I thought it might be kind of interesting.
100%.
I go back to the opening ceremony of the event, and because I'm the host, I get preferential treatment, and I get to meet the talent and stuff. And at the time, it was right when Watch the Throne had came out. Mm-hmm. And the two people that were performing were AKA and the LES, mm-hmm. which are basically Kanye and Jay-Z in South Africa. So while they were doing their thing, it ended, and I was blown away how talented they were. Mm-hmm. And when we were being introduced to each other and stuff, The LES takes his glasses off and he says, I know who you are. I used to skate. I said, talented and humble. That's strange in the rap field. If you ever come to Los Angeles, I'll show you around. So he takes me up on that offer because he said he was coming to Los Angeles the very next month. And when he lands, it was a simple text. Hey, I'm at Cabo Cantina. We're just going to give everybody plugs. Everybody gets plugs.
Okay.
Plug for you! Plug for you! Plug for you!
Everybody gets a plug!
So, Cabo Cantina shoots me a text. I shoot him a text. And all I said was, old school or the truck? And he said, old school. So I have this really obnoxious, not that you would ever think I have anything to do with obnoxious or obnoxiousness, but I have this very obnoxious old school. It was the first donk. If you don't know what a donk is a Chevy anywhere between the mid to late 60s to the mid to late 80s on really big wheels.
Basically, Pimp My Ride.
Nothing at all to do with Pimp My Ride. So
every other episode of Pimp My Ride.
75, we'll put a photo right here between us. 75 Caprice Classic. Ooh. 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 Ice cream, jello on the inside.
Okay, continue.
So they grabbed a balcony seat at Cabo Cantina, so I was able to pull up right to the corner. And Leslie's just like, yes, let's do it. But somebody was having a different reaction.
Well, here's the thing. So in South Africa, I just, from my experience, anytime that people were super flashy, and I'd say that's a flashy car, there was always an agenda, right? So I came to see my brother's best friend. He's in town. This is really cool. Then Felix pulls up with like an entire show. The car is a whole personality on its own. So I was like, oh, of all the people in LA, this is the guy you found. He's a rapper in South Africa. So I just left South Africa and I left this life of like partying and just everything that comes with like hip-hop lifestyle and being out and all of that. Why are you laughing at me?
Go ahead.
And there's a lot of flashiness and want and gourd and everything. And so typically, obviously, Lizzie's going to attract seemingly, right, these kind of people. And so when you pulled up, I was just like, oh, you just found like another South African guy, basically. You pretty much found the one guy in LA that was like every guy in South Africa. So that's kind of how I started. But
so this lesson will teach you guys, if anything, don't judge a book by its cover. When you first see someone, that's actually the entire parable of this conversation. So I park in the back and I walk around front and I wrestle my way in. They had ordered every single thing on the right side of the menu. The table was totally full. The drinks are like this big. I grabbed a bunch of finger foods as well. Someone taps me on the shoulder and wants to shoot a photo with me. Mm-hmm. So if things weren't bad enough, Tanya's like, who is this guy? Like, they're shooting photos with him. And then since I'm treating my friend, instead of doing the 17 credit cards and everybody counting money and driving our waiter crazy, I just gave the person my credit card right when I walked in to pay for the table, and that was that. So when it was time for the bill to come, there was no bill, and cue Tanya.
So I find out that the bill's paid for, all my friends that are with me are like, yeah, this is like, he's such a good guy. And I am repulsed. Like, and this would happen all the time in SA. Like, you'd be out or having drinks with friends and that kind of thing. And then the waiter would come and say, oh, your bill's been paid for. But you get to the parking lot and dude's like, oh, hi, I'm the person that paid for your bill. Can I have your number? So there's always an attachment to it. So here I am, right, letting my past experiences inform this exact experience. And I'm going, no, in my head, I'm having this conversation. Going, I can pay my own way. Who does this guy think he is? Why does he think he came in here, he didn't even have a drink, and he paid the bill, completely offended? Does he think that I cannot pay my own? So this is a narrative in my mind.
Mind you, nobody slipped any money in my pocket while we were walking out. And then we got to the car, the car that she wasn't going to get into. But you know what ride always looks good? The free ride. It might not be the best ride, but it was definitely the free ride. So everybody jumped in down Hollywood Boulevard.
I lifted up the block, I could have walked.
Okay.
Continue. This is the first time that we've tried to tell the story together. So we're like arguing our way through the
okay.
story.
So you'll get your turn to tell some points, you know. Continue. We were taking turns here, right? It's like tennis. You can't play tennis by yourself.
I don't know how to play tennis.
I'll teach you. Where were we? I drop everybody off and I go home. Mind you, believe it or not, I was winding down from my party days. I kind of really didn't want him to reach out to me, but he did. But since he did, we were going to have to turn up. So I get the text message from Leslie. What are we doing tonight? I was like, ooh, tonight. Like every major city, there's something to do every night. Mm-hmm. And you can do nothing or you can do the thing. So I drove from downtown LA all the way to the Standard in Hollywood to pick up Leslie. Mm-hmm. And then Leslie lets me know that we're going to meet the girls that we met earlier at Bungalow in Santa Monica. Halfway there, we get a message from the girls at the Bungalow. You want to chime in right now? You don't like this piece of the story?
I just said, don't even bother coming here. The line is too long. We're not going to get in.
So, good looks on her. She gave us the heads up, but I threw out a couple text messages and, you know, stuff was okay. The Red Sea parts, or the Red Ropes part. I give everybody hug and love. Everybody's angry at us. Like, who do they think they are? Typical LA stuff. And then we party for a little while. Mm-hmm. But the party wasn't good enough because you can't just go to one place when you can go to two places. So my friend Nico hits me. I believe it was Nico that hit me. Said Warwick was opening. And Warwick is a cool place here in Hollywood. Or used to be a cool place. Might still be a cool place. I haven't been there in years because I'm a dad now. We walk in and Les is like blown away. He sees his favorite actress. There's Snoop Dogg, Too Short. If anybody ever goes out in LA, you know you see Snoop Dogg, Too Short. No, I'm just kidding. No banging on anybody. But the week was crazy. We got in Travis Barker's studio. We made a beat with Scoop DeVille. We shot a music video with Matt Alonzo. Oh, my bad. Let me pick up these names I just dropped. I'll just leave them there and I'll pick them up after the video.
This is happening like every night something's going on. I, at the time, was working. So I'm going to work and coming to meet up with them at night and then going back to work the next day. They're chilling during the day.
And the last night before Leslie left, we ended up at Mel's Diner all the way at the top of Sunset and over in Awesome Blossom and some other fast foods. It's that onion that's like fried and you break off the pieces of the onion ring of the onion and you dip it. Fourth meal. I'm saying goodbye to everybody. I think it's amazing because I can go back to my hermit life. I was reading a bunch of self-help books. My friend Fambino lives in New York. He has this cool brand called Affluent. Oh, dropped another name.
Oh my God.
He gave me this book that was called Psycho Cybernetics. And in the book, 3/4 of the way through the book, it talks about getting into a community. I really had never thought of the word community for so many years. I knew what a community was. I knew many communities where a lot of gangsters hung out in New York. I just didn't think of community. It didn't really spark anything at the moment when I was reading that in the book. It was a very near memory because I was in that chapter. Mm-hmm. And when Tanya was saying goodbye to me, she said, "What are you doing Wednesday night?" And I was like, oh gosh, no, we're gonna go out again? I didn't really feel that energy. And then she said, would you like to check out my church?
Yeah. So I invite him to church. And I remember as the words are like spilling out of my mouth, I'm going, oh, wait, no, just kidding. This is really awkward. It's like 3 a.m. We've been out the entire week. This is not exactly the best picture of like a Christian girl. Maybe I shouldn't invite him to church. He probably won't come. But as soon as I say that, you're like, yeah, sure.
I also said that you think the week was so crazy that you need to get me in a church.
Yeah. So anyway, the night ends. Fast forward to Wednesday.
Couldn't really remember the name of the church. Mm-hmm. The name is Mosaic. But Hollywood and La Brea, you can't forget.
Yeah.
Let's go a little deeper into Felix's personal life. On Tuesdays, usually a bunch of TED Talks would load, and I would call it TED Talk Tuesdays. So I would grab a 6-pack of beer and some pizza, and I would watch all these TED Talks. So these TED Talks and these self-help books and the fact that I was, are you ready for this? I was practicing celibacy. All this stuff came to fruition with her invite to me actually going, what day did she say church was? And I said, I think it's Wednesday. So I decided to go up there. If any of you have been to church in the recent 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. they don't look exactly how they used to look.
20, 30 years ago.
There's a lot of progressive expressions of church nowadays, mm-hmm. and Mosaic is probably the church that's pioneering that. And when mm-hmm. I walked up to the front, I saw a bunch of people hanging out, having coffee and stuff, and I was like, well, they look pretty normal.
Yeah, the funniest thing is that I remember I'd invited him, and I'd thought about the invitation once after that, but I thought that night when we parted, like, oh, okay, that was my brother's friends and his friends, and I invited this guy, but he's not going to come, because you invite people to church all the time, and the percentage of people who actually cross that threshold and walk into the door versus the percentage of invites that I'm giving out is like quite an extreme. So when someone says yes, it's a celebration.
But she's a very special person, because the sad statistic is less than 5% of people that go to church invite people to church.
Yeah.
So if you're a churchgoer and you have that great thing that you're a part of and you're receiving from that and you're not giving somebody else the opportunity, it's super lame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just is, straight up.
Yeah, and what I didn't know at the time, and maybe this is putting the cart before the horse, but you had not been invited to a church outside of going to, like,
besides my brother and a wedding.
No one had said, hey, Felix, do you want to come to church with me?
It wasn't, like, totally foreign. My brother's a pastor in a Mormon congregation, and he used to take me to church as I was a child, and my dad was kind of like the pastor of the house. He'd pray over every meal. If we drove more than 50 miles, the Bible was open on the dashboard. But my dad asked my brother to take care of me. My family was working so hard. They had transplanted over from Cuba, and they're just working 6 days a week, and probably even seven, and my dad didn't connect with a church when he moved to New York, so he asked my brother to handle it. And then as soon as I got old enough, I ran away from my brother, and I would never go to church anymore. So I think that was probably like maybe a 30-something year arch that besides a wedding, or maybe somebody's baptism, like a child's baptism, I had been to church.
Yeah. So this day, it was so full, it was just like, you could just see heads. And I walked out because I was waiting for another friend to come in, Amanda. And I'm at the top of the stairs, and I just see this, like, bald head just bobbing through the crowd. And I'm going, no way. There's no way this guy came. So I was trying to follow where you were going to meet.
Why
you got to
be a bald head, though?
But I don't think you were. A shaved head? You weren't wearing a hat.
I'm just fine.
Just, you know. I'm not saying you're bald-headed. I'm just saying your head was
okay. Yeah, we'll just check.
So I was trying to, like, find my way across the crowd to meet him in the lobby, and I meet him, and I'm the most awkward. Like, it was so awkward. So I go, and you were fine, and you said hi, and you smelled good, and all those things.
Wow, smelled good.
Brush your teeth, took a shower, blah, 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 all the things. And then I said, I followed up with the I think two of the most isolating 101 never say this to someone that walks into a church.
They
said,
smelled
hi. I didn't say that. I said, hi, who did you come with, and what are you doing here? If you have ever served on a welcome team or connections team or any of that stuff in a church, never say those three statements. But you stayed, so.
So we walk into the auditorium, and the lights were off, and I thought that was a little strange. And then the music fired up. It was kind of like a
alternative
rock, progressive, pop. Mosaic MSC has its own sound. You guys should check it out. But anyway, they go off, and I'm trying to figure out why everybody stood up while I'm sitting down. And I'm trying to figure out how everybody knows the words to these songs. And she's telling me, if you come often enough, you'll learn the words. And I shoot a quick text to my brother, and I'm like, hey, bro, are the lights off at your church? And my brother says, yes, the middle of the night, the lights are off. I go, no, I'm at a church right now, and there's some sort of rock band, and they're playing music. And my brother's like, oh, there's a really progressive expression of the church right now that kind of conducts church in the dark with, like, neon lights and monitors and all this stuff, and kind of forward music, not hymns. But the real question is, who could possibly get you in a church? And I said, oh, I'll get right back to you. And I hung up on my brother. Then the two singers come out, and one of them's name is Carlos Pimentel, and I was like, wow. I was like, this dude's like Enrique Iglesias or like Mark Anthony or something. And then the other one is Mariah McManus, was the other lead singer, and I was like, is this like Bjork or Adele? Or and I was like, sonically, I was tripping. So I sat back down, and I tried to get him a record deal. So I hit my buddy Dante Ross, and he was somewhere, I don't know where, Atlantic or where he was. And I was like, do you sign Christian bands? And he goes, no, bro, what are you talking about? And I go, man, I'm trying to make a buck. I'm like, man, I'm sure they can sing something else, bro. They speak English. And he's like, no, bro, we don't. All right, whatever, I'll get back to you.
The entire time, I'm standing next to him while he's sitting, and everyone else is standing. And I'm going, oh, my gosh.
he's so rude. Why didn't he even come to be on his phone the whole time? I don't know, this is just so weird.
Super judgy.
No, Tanya's being judgy?
I'm a new woman now.
Yeah, but you know, it's a good name for Christians to be judgy, right?
Yeah, I was a very, very typical Christian. Ooh. I've shaken off my religion.
Ooh. And then the pastor comes out, and the pastor was Pastor Joe Smith. And I looked at Pastor Joe Smith, and I looked at Tanya, and I said, "Where's the pastor? Who's this dude?" And she said, "Oh, that's the pastor." And I was like, "Oh, no tie, no suit, no pulpit. He's telling a funny story, no scriptures yet. It might have been a Bible. I was trying to figure out exactly what was called.
There was a Bible.
So the dude reminded me a little bit of Theo from The Cosby Show and my brother. Mm-hmm. If you're not as old as I am, you might not know Theo from The Cosby Show. He's something else right now. I think he's a detective or something on TV, but Google Theo from The Cosby Show. So he had a cool sense of humor. He felt warm. He was telling this love story. I had just broken up with not really a long-term relationship, but I probably had broken up with my third relationship. Not that there was any relationships before Tanya. It was just people that I knew of the opposite sex. And the message just kind of connected.
Pero también.
Takes a sip. And I asked her, as the first scripture came up on the screen, I now see what the digital screens were for. It was to put a Bible verse in huge format so the entire room could see it. Mm-hmm. I was like, makes perfect sense. Because how are you going to read a Bible in the dark? And then she goes, "Oh, there's this Bible app." I said, "Bible app, you can just download that." That's when I found out about the YouVersion Bible app. And I think she grabbed my phone and downloaded the Bible.
Probably after the gathering, not while Pastor was speaking.
And then there was versions in the Bible where you could read like NIV, that's New International Version. There's the Message version that kind of speaks like we do, or maybe not exactly like I speak. Yeah, how civilized people speak. And I just couldn't believe that the Bible was this digestible. Mm-hmm. So for me to hear a Bible that I could understand and how he usefully used these verses to illustrate his story and vice versa, it was so interesting to me because it was kind of like a more intentional TED Talk. He also came out with an earpiece.
Yes, he did. Actually.
And he wasn't Janet Jackson. So I was like, earpiece, normal dress code, motivational message, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I said goodbye to her. Maybe they didn't even take the number?
My number?
Yeah.
You had it.
So I take off, a couple days go by, and then I remember that church usually happens on Sunday again. So I decided to come back, and then Pastor Irwin McManus spoke.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you've never heard Irwin McManus speak, you're doing yourself a disservice. Yeah. Whatever stage of faith you're in or lack of faith you're in, he will speak right to what you need to hear. And besides that, he is the most brilliant communicator I've ever heard in my life. He was illustrating paintings as he spoke.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. And then she let me know he's the senior pastor of the church. And then that made sense because I saw his essence in the other pastors who had spoke. And I decided to keep coming back.
I kind of just want to talk about like the romantic aspect of it, because every time I tell the story, people always ask, like, so were you attractive to him? Was he attractive to you? Were you just friends? What happened? You know? And I must say, even though I was the super judgy girl at the bar, I remember when he walked in, I went, wow, that guy is super hot. And that guy is also my brother's best friend's friend. So like, there's no, you know, respect. Then the whole thing with the skateboarder came in and I was like curious, but I almost wanted as little information as possible because I was like, I don't want to get invested in this. Absolutely not. He'll go to church and it'll be fine. So when Felix came to church, at that point in my spiritual journey, I had come to faith about a year prior. I had gotten baptized the same month that I met him, but my upbringing was that I was born Muslim because you take your father's faith. I grew up in an Anglican Christian school, so I was baptized and confirmed and all of that in high school, primary school, and then high school. And then when I graduated from high school at 18, I left the church, so I found Mosaic at 20, 21, and I entered into a relationship with Jesus again. And it was a turning point in my life. I always, when I tell the story, I say I was at the intersection between my past and my future, because I could have chosen to stand at the duality of like, do I what do I kind of discover who this Jesus person is, and do I engage in this faith, or do I just kind of dabble in like, oh, these Islamic cultural traditions and hold on to these things for fear of like disappointing, or just wanted to keep an even keel. I thought it was a very respectful thing to still identify at least with the Islamic cultural aspects of things, and that's what made everything really confusing. Felix walks into Mosaic, and I'm still very early into my spiritual journey, but I'd been at Mosaic for about a year before he had, and just got him baptized. So I was at that place where you are just so excited about your faith, and you want to tell everybody. That's why the invitation was so easy, right? Even though I took it back. At that point in my journey, I was celibate as well. I wasn't dating. I mean, I really didn't date much, but I wasn't dating at all. I was just really focusing on my faith and what was going on in my family as well. My father had cancer, and he was essentially, looking back, I was preparing for the passing of my father. So it was not a good time to be in a relationship at all. I was just trying to focus on being in a really healthy place and just chasing after Jesus and discovering what life with Jesus looks like, which at that point was something new every day. So we're both at Mosaic at this point, and probably a month into us being coming to church weekly together, and we would save seats for each other, or I would save a seat for him, I don't really know which way it went. We actually started talking after the other, and so there was one week, I think like a month later, he said, oh, what do you do? We hadn't even really like spoken about personal stuff, because we were just talking about really church, God, church, that was it. And so we're standing after the gathering, and Felix asked me what I do, and I say, oh, I'm actually a designer. I work for a brand called Commune. To which he says, oh my goodness, I went to, is it called American Rag?
Is it Aardvark's? No, it's Wasteland.
Wasteland?
Wasteland. Everyone just got a plug. Plugs! Okay. You get a plug. Go
ahead. Everybody gets a plug! It's yes. Really fun to okay, do. Cool. So I say I work for this brand called Commune, and I was very early in my fashion design career, and there he is again.
Shh.
So I made this jacket that ended up at the store called Aardvark's, or whatever you said it was. Wasteland. So he says, oh, I was at Wasteland the other day, and I tried on this jacket, and it was this black denim jacket, waxed denim, and he's describing a jacket that I had designed. So I said, oh, and I kind of finished the sentence of what the jacket was. I said, don't worry about it. I'll bring one for you next week. So I bring my jacket, and you were like really surprised by this.
So the jacket at Wasteland was a medium, and that's why I didn't pick it up. And she was going to be so nice that she was going to gift me the jacket, because the jacket actually still existed.
I bring him this jacket at church, and to say thank you, he says, oh, I'm going to take you for a salad. And so he suggests the salad downtown, which just happens to be my favorite salad spot. And that's just how love stories go, right?
We meet at Simply Salad. Come up here. Maybe he'll last up here.
So there, I had had a few changes in my career from the last time I actually checked in with him about work stuff to when we actually sat down for our salad. So I was promoted to the head designer of a brand called Econ Limited, and was asked to design a collection for a skateboarder. I knew nothing about skateboarding except for my brief stint when I was like 12 years old, loved Avril Lavigne, listened to all skateboard attached music, whatever I thought that was. And I thought the first time I should get on a skateboard would be a good idea. The skateboarder ends up being somebody who had been living with you.
Yeah, so I had actually came across this skateboarder, Manny Santiago, on YouTube.
Okay.
And I decided to start working with him, and the circles just got closer and closer, and then he was actually living with me. And not only was he living with me, I was helping him actually get some deals in skateboarding. She tells me she just got a deal designing Echo Unlimited for a skateboarder, and I tell her that's pretty ironic because I just helped a skateboarder get a deal at Echo Unlimited. I go, what's the skateboarder's name?
So I said, Manny something.
She checks her email. She's meeting with Mark Echo, Ben Olalik. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure. My bad, Ben, for mutilating your name. And Manny Santiago. And I was like, Wow. See, Lion trips out about it still to this day. And then I looked up and I was like, her? Now, I wasn't really the deepest, most spiritual person or anything like that, but what had happened was I got into an accident and I really thought I had lost my life. I actually kind of lost consciousness for a second, and I had a crazy conversation with God on the way home, and I was telling myself, I don't know why you spared me, or I guess I was screaming it at him. I don't know why you spared me, but I'm going to figure it out. I just had a heightened sensitivity for, I guess you could say, God to show up. And I started like looking for him everywhere, while before I wasn't checking for him at all. And all these little instances didn't seem like a coincidence. It seemed like...
So that was your moment.
That was the time that I questioned, I guess for the first time, like, is it her?
For me, I was still in a place where he was somebody that was trying to figure out his faith, and I had made this commitment and this covenant with God, like, hey, this is my deal, this guy's really attractive, but this is like, there's no dating here. So my only concern, my primary concern, was his spiritual development. So when he had that moment at the Sada place, I think it was something that perhaps I was like suppressing for a long time. For about a year, I'd been praying for my husband, and it was just this, I'd wake up in the morning, I'd pray for my family, my husband, friends, and I'd write my prayers down. And sometimes on my commute to work, I had about a 45 minute commute, so I would be praying in the car. One day I was on my way to the office on the freeway, and I realized that at some point, I had stopped praying for my husband and I was just praying for Felix. I had been praying for Felix and my husband as separate people. But I remember in that moment, I felt like God was very, very clearly saying to me, screaming at me, going, hey, this is the man that you're going to marry. I felt like I was going to swerve my car off the road because it was such a jarring moment, you know, when God speaks to you so clearly. And there was also that moment where, hey, God has spoken to me so clearly, but there's nothing that I can't tell this to anybody. I can't tell this to you. I'm going to just be weird. I'm going to freak you out completely. And so I kind of just sat with that information going, okay, so I believe that you've spoken to me. I know that something, like, you're doing something here. Not everything that God says to you is something that you need to share. Not all the promises that God gives you is something that you need to tell other people. Sometimes you just bury those in your heart and you just wait for the time that, like, they come to fruition.
Now, mind you, I had never really dated, and even less in a church context, because I wasn't ever in a church context. And stuff starts to stick to you at the church at different levels and different times and stuff. And while I was trying to figure stuff out, her and I didn't really have that energy, but yet we were best friends, becoming closer friends.
Yeah.
And there was actually one night where there was two other people who I was kind of like talking to. We went to church and I brought three girls to church.
Yes.
And then everybody looked at me, who was kind of like in leadership, or was my friends, some Bible studies I was in, and people that were close to me, and they said, what are you doing? I go, what do you mean? I go, I'm not anything with any one of these girls. Why can't they meet themselves, and why can't we let God sort it out, and whatever, whatever. So mind you, not recommended, but I was so committed to what I was learning and this new experience at church. And the one thing that had landed rock solid was I wanted to be completely transparent. And I wanted to be completely transparent with whatever I was doing. I wanted to be completely transparent with whoever I was talking to. And I knew that if there was any kind of like shadiness, it would have just been taking me back to who I was, but not who I was becoming. And I don't know if that really landed too well with her.
No, it
was... Can't say it would land too well with anybody, but that's our reality.
Yeah, and mind you, I'm like, oh God, so this is my husband, the guy that brought 2-3 other girls into church, and I'm sitting in this aisle, and it's like, okay, this is me, this is Felix, and this is this entourage of women, and I must just bury the secret, going, how are we going to get from this to this, you know, like how are you going to shorten the distance between this? I just had to be a friend, essentially, and I had to recite that promise of, hey, my priority is your spiritual journey. My priority is that you know God, that you you create good friendships and you have leaders in your life that can help you along the spiritual journey that are men. And that was what I focused on.
As we got closer and I got more involved at the church, I had much better influences in my life. And one of the things that we were doing kind of regularly together as well was we were going to this Bible study on Monday nights. And it was just getting a little bit deeper into scriptures. And we had great mentors there, Pastor Ralph and Pam Neighbor. They were married for 35 years and they actually taught a Bible study on their 35th wedding anniversary. And one of the things that they taught us that night that was just embedded in my mind forever was that he speaks to God to speak to her and that she speaks to God to speak to him, and that they may disagree about whatever they're discussing, but they only have one way that they funnel it. And then, you know, you started to learn about things like fighting for each other, not against each other, and just a lot of things that always led with what was the wisest choice first, as opposed to what you were feeling. Because your feelings will fool you often, but the wisest choice will always be the wisest choice. We had a lot of personal growth in that Bible study. And then I'm gonna say it started to get a little frustrating for you, maybe.
It was very frustrating at that point because we became really close friends. There was no intimacy, but there was emotional intimacy. And so when, you know, there's these messages start to get really confusing when you're like, okay, I'm bonding with this person spiritually, emotionally. This is my best friend. You're of the opposite sex. So obviously there is like this tension happening, but it's an unspoken tension. We also have not mentioned that we have a 20-year age difference.
Mm. Yeah,
which,
just a little bit.
Now, because we've been married for such a long time, is like it's not even something that I bring up, but because of the age difference, I had such a big respect for him, and he had such a big respect for me.
There was like an unspoken X factor. Unfortunately, her father had passed away, and a few months after that, my father had passed away, and that was also this serendipitous thing where I was going, wow, like both our fathers passed away, and we were kind of each other's pillar of support at church, and that was kind of one of the reasons why we kept messaging each other, because there was just all this commonality and all this stuff going on and all this emotional stuff going on. So while there might have been more of an angst from her because we were so close, there was kind of a more distancing from me. Because I was looking at myself as 20 years her senior and potentially 20 years outside of my son's life that much sooner, or daughter's life that much sooner, if we were to get into a serious relationship. Because it seemed like to me that I was only going to get a relationship with these new parameters that I had kind of adopted at church in one way. And I was like, she's my best friend. That's what you want to marry. You want to marry your best friend. And if I marry you, we're going to have kids and this and that and the other. And then finally, that all came to a head once at a good friend of mine, Pastor Emerson. We were in his backyard. Was it celebrating Lincoln's first birthday?
So we're in the backyard and I'm at the end of my road of patience. And I'm like, this guy needs to step up right now. I wouldn't say called your bluff, but I was like, hey, like, what is going on? What are we? Like, what is this?
You know? And then I revealed that issue I had with the 20-year difference.
So both our dads had passed away, his in his 80s, mine at 60. And so life is so fragile, you know? And I think when you bring up the life in the timeline that we understand as humans, it's out of our control. Who knows if we're given another day? Every single day is a gift. So I just said, so how about we just live the next 20 years.
Well, it's a little short now that I think about it.
Well, it was kind of like, why don't we not focus on you being gone 20 years too soon? Let's just focus on living the fullest life the next 20 days, 20 weeks, 20 years. Yeah. I said, damn, she's mature too. We started to close that gap a little bit. The lunches were a little bit more frequent. Mm-hmm. I think you started like dressing up, but you started showing a little bit more skin and wearing more.
Get it.
We did kind of sort of plan our first dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going to bring over the entertainment.
Yes.
And I started flexing. I made this like tempeh, spaghetti. Mm-hmm. I made the noodles from scratch with my knees and my elbows. And I'm telling that I bought the noodles.
Okay.
and I set up the area real nice. There was like stones for no reason, just like stones for like atmosphere. And the ding dong.
Oh,
she's here. Mm-hmm. So I have the place set. I set the candles off. I kill the lights. It's like, I mean, I'm telling you, it's Spago. Like, it's it.
Mm.
Right? At least something like that. Mm. At least that's how I remember it in my mind.
Okay.
And when I opened the door, I was like, hey, you look amazing. Whatever. I was like, what'd you bring to watch? And she brought Dango. Dango?
Django.
Django. She brought Dango's my friend from Miami. No, she brought Django.
Okay, so can I just defend myself
the Django.
At this moment?
You know the Django.
Django. So
Lion knows the Django.
Okay, so I need to explain myself. I was on this like Black History movie binge watch. So
I was not.
So I thought, oh, you know what? I'm just going to share with him like what I'm watching.
I was on like a French Kiss, Notebook, like totally other kind of vibe.
He cooks dinner. I come in. We watch Django. And then...
I think Jesus had turned that bottle of water into wine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there was a bottle of wine involved somewhere in there. I don't know. If you're not familiar with Django, I think they say the N-word like 200 times. It is one of the nastiest, like most
it's such
foul,
a good movie.
Potty mouth,
it's a
like
great
movies.
Film.
Just does not set the tone.
100%
especially
watch it.
With the black woman, I would have thought. And then there was the kiss. There was the first kiss. We had crossed that line. We kissed. Yeah.
And then 6 months later, we got married.
Base. I wasn't kidding when I said if we crossed that line, that it's all or nothing. There really was nothing to hold back from once I kissed her. I had no doubt in my mind that after a year and a half of speaking to her every single day, 2 years? A year and a half? After speaking to you every single day, there was no doubt in my life that I could speak to her every single day for eternity. And when we kissed, and that felt kind of nice too, I was like, okay, all points covered.
So then 6 months later, yes, we really did get married. And I think for everyone around us, it felt like, whoa, they just got married because we eloped.
See, my mom was 81, 2, and had never traveled by herself. And your mom had just had back surgery and is 2 days away.
Yeah, in South Africa. What happened was...
What happened was
I had gotten to the end of the road of being patient. Now, this is 6 months from that kiss. My work permit was finishing. And
there goes the camera. Hold on.
Okay, Lion's back.
Lion's back, or we were going to lose camera B.
Yes.
So go ahead.
I was going to go back to South Africa. I thought at this point, okay, if we're not like, we don't have this tag, this title, this something. As a woman, I think it's like, for us, it's important. You need to have clarity and know what's going on. I do understand that everything about our relationship said that that's what I was, but there was no...
outward public PDA that we hadn't really crossed that line yet. Oh, okay. And I think that was like Lion. See, Lion loves that, like just outside PDA for everyone to see.
For everybody.
I'm a little bit more of a private person, and I think because I spend so much of my life selling myself and putting myself out there riding a skateboard and selling products and whatever else, that I just wanted my personal life to be my personal life, but it was finding that happy medium where I was like, okay, I'm gonna get into a relationship again. I'm ready to show the world this relationship. And so it's probably just a lot of me that I was still working through.
So yeah, I remember that time being really difficult for me. I had to make a decision in what I was doing with my work. Essentially, I was going to find a new job, a visa, or go back to South Africa, figure that out there, and then come back to the States when I was ready.
Gotta move quick. Give him a bottle of milk. Okay, go.
So I write him, you, a goodbye letter. And it wasn't so much that there was any part of me that was done with the relationship. It was just that I didn't see any better options. I felt like I was backed into a corner with everything else that was going on in my life, and I didn't have clarity in anything, in my relationship, in my work, in what am I doing with my future, physically, am I how much longer am I allowed to be in this country? I'd lost my father. I had not been able to go bury my father. I'd gone through so much loss and so much pain, and I was still in this grieving process of many aspects of my life. So I was like, you know what, I'm done. I'm done, I'm tired. It's not that I'm not in love with this man, but I just don't see how we're gonna move forward. And so I write a letter and I just say, hey, you know, like, I love you, but I'm going home. And we'll figure it out, or it will figure itself out. To which he said, absolutely not.
Well, I wish I could say I was one of those people where I said, I heard from God. And I'm going to admit that since then till now, I do have a more heightened sense of God's presence. But sometimes it shows up in something you're reading or a movie or a picture or someone who pops up. But I was convinced that all these different things that were happening between us that I couldn't really explain, the amount of things that had taken place in such a short amount of time, I was convinced that she was not only in my life for a purpose, but there was a plan greater than that. Mm-hmm. So when I looked like I was gonna lose my best friend, I couldn't bear to deal with that, especially with somebody who had gotten to the place of being my best friend in the manner that she did. Mm-hmm. She so holistically cared for my health and well-being, spiritually and mentally, before anything else, physically. And that, I think that's why I laughed so loud when she said that I was hot or whatever you said, because I didn't feel that kind of tension between us whatsoever. When she wrote me that letter, I was like, you are bugging out. Will you marry me? I was like, there's no way I'm letting you go away. And she looked at me kind of like, you want to marry me because I'm leaving? And I go, no, I want to marry you because I love you and you're my best friend and I don't want to lose you and I can't see my life without you. And please don't let it be about that, but let it be about us and what we've been trying to build here, even just unknowingly, but it was coming to fruition. And mind you, I wasn't really hip to the game. I didn't know you could get like 10 racks for getting married for paperwork. I might have charged her for the 10 and then, you know, gone.
Okay.
I could have beat you for $10,000 for the paperwork, and then we could have thrown that $10,000 at the wedding. Mm. Mm-mm. See, I wasn't always saved and I had this new mind. And the old feelings come out every once in a while.
Okay, yeah. So we have this conversation. There was no... The proposal, the engagement, there was nothing romantic about it.
We had the Django.
That was a different night.
Okay. I should have rented Roots. If I would have rented Roots and led with Roots right into the proposal.
First off, he said, will you marry me? To which I said, absolutely not.
I don't remember it like that, but go ahead.
I said, no, I will not get married for a visa. We may have said, why not?
Who knows? But it was just real. And I remember my mom, when she told me the story about her and my dad and when they got married, when my dad proposed, she said something similar. She said, you know, there was nothing romantic about it, but there was just this deep certainty that I knew that this person was my best friend and they were going to take care of me for the rest of my life and every part of who I am. And that, for me, that was enough. I knew that no matter what happened, like, he had my back. Like, we've always had my back. I think that's why it was so easy. But the complicated part is that I needed to be out of the country, like, within a week or 2 weeks or something like that. I went online. I went to find the quickest
registrar's office that was taking weddings. It wasn't a cute one at City Hall with like the pillars and all the things. It wasn't the Beverly Hills like fancy one. It was the registrar's office in East LA, which I think now is like under construction at this point. So we make the appointment for the wedding. We call a friend who is a photographer, who's going to be a witness, who's going to come on her lunch break, run over, be a witness, and then take some photos to prove, like, hey, this just happened, and then go back to work. The insanity of it, looking back, if I would never give this advice to somebody, but the same week that we got married, we also had signed a lease and put down a deposit for the studio that we're in right now, which is Allies, which is our business. So not only was I leaving the country, I decided to stay, get in business together, get in bed together.
While all that was going on, we had found this warehouse where I pitched this idea for a potential business venture. And I was like, you know what? If we save our money and throw it all at this warehouse, we can get into starting our lives as opposed to just throwing like a really cool party. Mm-hmm. I guess I was just being really practical about things. I'm like, let's get you legal, mm-hmm. and let's throw this money at a future business,
yeah.
and let's get into, you know, the stuff that's actually going to sustain us, and we'll figure out the party and stuff later.
Yeah.
I
mean, even with our rings.
Like, I'll take the blame for being the bad party planner.
We were the bad party planners. But even with our rings, we just went down to the jewelry district and we got some gold rings and we're like, okay, that's great.
So we had the most incredible honeymoon.
Mm.
We came right back to the warehouse that we had invested in and we started sanding wood floors.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, how do we let people know that we got married? And then it hit me. How do you let people know everything? Instagram. So here's Saturday night. We shoot photos of our hands.
Mm-hmm.
And we just posted the photos Sunday morning, right?
Yeah, Sunday morning.
And we're heading over to church and our phones are blowing up and our parents are kind of freaking out too and our relatives are kind of freaking out too and everybody's finding out at a different time but kind of at the same time and
mm-hmm.
everybody's referring to the photo for proof. Yes, it did cause some conflict at the church and that's not something that's easy to deal with.
No, absolutely.
Especially when you're new to a church. It was a great lesson for all of us to learn how to deal with conflict at the church.
Yeah. You know, now we've been married for 5 years and we're still super involved in the church. We have been for many years. And I think now in retrospect, I completely understand the conflict that took place because I mean, as you can imagine, like the leaders that are in your church, the people that have been on the spiritual journey with you and in your lives and helping you grow, weren't left out of it. They weren't a part of it. And I want to believe that the response to our marriage, which frankly wasn't the most positive
one. It was mixed.
It was mixed. Was because people were left out. And when you're going through such a big life change, people want to celebrate with you. They want to be a part of it, however big or small that entails. And so we had to really wrestle with that.
And that Sunday, it seemed like there was a pink elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't really figure out exactly what it was, but we left kind of feeling this unease. And I was going, wow, I thought, you know, like wow, there's going to be like, my God, you got married! I thought it was just going to be like more like overwhelming joy, but I was just kind of like in shock. And then that Wednesday we came back to church because this cool thing called midweek, in case you can't make it from Sunday to Sunday, you get a little boost in the middle.
Yeah.
So we come back for our boost in the middle and we have a tough conversation with our pastors and they asked us to step down from leadership.
Yes.
And that was a new term for me as well. Mind you, I may have been involved in everything and one would have thought that, you know, I was a leader by title, but no one had ever entitled me anything. So when I was asked to step down from leadership, I respectfully said that my leadership couldn't be removed because it was given to me by God.
Yeah.
And my pastor looked at me and kind of acknowledged what I said because it was said respectfully. And then again, I agreed to disagree and I offered that we would stop coming to church or leave the church if we were a bad example of what was supposed to be going on at the church. Because we loved everybody so much, the last thing that we wanted to do was to be a bad example or lead somebody in another direction,
yeah,
since we were being considered leaders at the church.
Yeah, absolutely. It was perhaps one of the most challenging moments of conflict that I've ever experienced, because you're going through a time that should be one that's filled with joy and celebration. And because of the way that we had decided to get married and people had not been prepared, we had to deal with the shrapnel of their shock. And we had to process how they felt about how we felt about each other.
The beautiful thing is we kind of dealt with it. We went home, we prayed over it. We cried a lot.
A lot.
And we, you were called to go to a Bible study at Pastor Kim's house. And
yes,
I was called by Pastor Emerson to go to a guy's night, men's thing. We weren't alienated by the church. We were still pulled into community. And we knew that was our community. But the funny thing was, as things got better, Pastor Ralph, who had asked us to step down from leadership, took us to get a coffee. And he asked us a really stiff question. He said, "Why did you guys not leave?" And I said to him, I go, "Well, you can thank yourself for that, because you taught me how to feed myself." Mm-hmm. You see, I knew that if I wanted someone to look like Jesus, I needed to look like Jesus. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't look like what I wanted to see reciprocated, who was going to see it if I left?
Yeah.
So our relationship spoke louder than our words did, and our actions spoke louder than anything else. And that really is what brought the healing. When there's conflict, you can't heal by running away. Oftentimes people look at the church kind of like it's supposed to be a new car dealership and everything's supposed to smell perfect and be perfect and all shiny and new, when realistically, that is not what it is. It's more maybe like a garage. We're all kind of working on each other. We're all kind of building each other up. And the pastor, the head mechanic, whatever, may have more knowledge about what needs to take place to make things come back to whole again. And that's where you can agree to disagree and defer to your spiritual authority and people in your life who you trust and really look like what you want to live a life to look like. The major defining point in us reconciling was that our pastors have created such a beautiful life that that's the kind of life that we want to create.
People leave the church for lesser offense all the time.
Oh gosh, someone takes your seat, they leave the church.
Yeah, the bathroom's not like up to par, they leave the church. And so when you have a family and you have a fight with your sibling, your brother or sister, which if you have siblings, you've fought with them in your life. At my household, when dinner was ready and food was served, you still had to come to the table. Like, you didn't have a choice not to come to the table. And even though that there was still tension in that moment and there was still disagreement, we broke bread together as a family. That's how we exercise the power of making a choice and standing by it. Like, the church is our chosen family. And we are going to disagree throughout our lives, throughout our lifetime of being part of this community. But at the end of the day, you still have to come to the table.
The truth will always surface. But the truth brings a peace. Us just being us fix things, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and them just not giving up on us.
Yeah.
You know, if you're part of a good church, they don't give up on you.
Yeah.
And if you're invested in your church, you don't give up on your church.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Yeah. Like, God placed the church on earth to give us all a family we may not have available. You can't choose what family you're born into, but you can choose who you make your family.
Yeah, 100%. So now we have Lion.
And a 2-hour conversation to edit.
Yes, which you will be doing.
Yeah, right.
Just kidding. And a really beautiful life. We have a business that has sustained our family, that has allowed both of us to leave a corporate environment to raise our son and continue pursuing dreams and do things like Free People, Free People.
Lion's done.
He's so dumb.
And I've lost my wife and my child, not permanently. We will see you online very soon because we are posting these videos every Wednesday and we're meeting in person every Friday. Thank you so much. See you later. Oh, wait, wait. You're back.
Bye.
Say bye, bye.
Bye. We love you.
Yeah. Oh, watch this. Watch this. Ready? Bye. Bye. Wiggle it. Wiggle it. Wiggle it. Oh, hey. Yeah. I just thought I'd wiggle it somehow. He doesn't even know. Who is that? Wiggle it.
Just a little bit.
I want to make you wiggle it.